Hey guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Nick, and we're going to be talking about everything fitness, health, and the challenge.
Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here. Welcome back to another episode of the Challenge Weekly Show. I'm here joined with our co-host, Coach Nick. Coach Nick, welcome to the Challenge Podcast.
Hi, Coach Steve. Thank you very much. I'm very happy to be here week 28. 28 hours together.
Yes. So this is podcast number 28. We've been 28 hours together chatting about all things fitness, health, and the challenge. It's been exciting, Nick.
Yeah, we're just getting started with our little chats. So fantastic. Really good.
We are. And it is. It's week 11 of the challenge this week. And, you know, it's that time to start thinking about the end of the challenge. And I think it's an important time now in that week 11, as we go into week 12, to start thinking about, firstly, our final photo. Okay. And we often get lots of questions about, what should I be doing for my final photo? And should I be doing like a peak week or a competition prep? And look, our common advice is for individuals to just continue with their preparation at the moment, continue with their nutrition plan, continue with their training. And once we get to the end of week 12, then we could worry with our photos. And what I'd suggest for individuals is to take photos across a few days. So we know that, you know, your body image can change quickly over the course of a few hours, depending on, you know, have you been to the toilet? Have you drunk some water? Did you go and train? Did you just wake up? Have you been at work all day? And even just the lighting of the space that we're in, the time of the day, these can all add in little factors. So if you were to take your photo across a few different days, a few different tries, you can swipe through all your different photos, see which one you want to upload as your final photo. Then you could do a nice little write-up. You can upload a few extra photos as well. And then you'll be really confident that you've presented the best outcome that you have.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect. And yeah, just absolutely make sure that you are holding that completion document and that you have your full body in the photo. We want to see it. So whether you, a little tip that I have over my many years of taking full body photos is you can actually set up a video and then just do all your different things that you want to do and then take screenshots from the video, because that's easier than going 10 seconds running back, that sort of a thing. So that's what I tend to do if I want to take any shots. So taking a video is the best idea, because then you can stare at that for ages and people will go, what are you doing? But then you can probably get the best shot from the video.
I like that. So yes, as you said, really important to have that completion document, really important that you are not flexing. So we do have individuals that would put up the bicep flex as their final photo. Unfortunately, that doesn't count. So we need to have just a same photo as your starting photo, just standing there. And then you also get a chance to upload another 10 extra photos to your final completion. So that's where you can have your flexing photos. You can have some back shots in there, some side shots, maybe some photos of you training. Maybe you did a photo shoot and some really nice, pretty ones that are done up. Add them into those extra photos. But for that final photo, it's just a front-on image, just like we did it at the start of the challenge.
Yeah, perfect, perfect. So, and don't overly stress about it. You've done the hard work, so it will be visible in your results.
That's right. And look, when it does come to that idea of a peak week, you know, many individuals will look at something like pro bodybuilders and think, oh, what did they do? Did they go and cut out all their water and sit in a sauna for 6 hours? And did they cut out all their salt and play with carbs and all these bits and bobs? Sure, there are some strategies that can be helpful. And I've actually written up a nice article summarizing a little bit of scientific research around that area. So if you're interested in that kind of pathway, great, go check out that article. You'll find that on the Challenge website. However, you know, they really add just those extra 1% on top of our work. If you're lean, you're going to be lean. If you're not, that extra work is really going to be a big gamble and it's not going to pay off. It's not going to be the day and night effect that you're maybe looking for. If you put in the work, it's going to show regardless if you try to do a water cut, salt manipulation, carb thing, sit in your sauna or whatever other bits and bobs that's out there. Okay.
Definitely. Yeah. 100%. I've done both. I've done nothing leading into a peak week of a show, and I've done the full, just like your article. And to be honest, for me, I ended up looking the same for both. So in my opinion, in my humble opinion, but you know, it's different for everybody.
It is, yeah. Now, look, outside of the challenge, there's also some exciting things that are happening around the world, and that is the world of the Olympics. And I'm a big fan of the Olympics, especially the weightlifting in the Olympics. So I've been glued to my couch all weekend watching the female 49 kilo class, and then I was watching the guys in the 61 and 67s, and Jesus Christ, they are just insanely strong. Like watching some of the girls who are under 49 kilos. These are small girls, really like the outliers of the challenge. We do have a few challenges that are like in that category, but real outliers, not many people you meet who are under 49 kilos. And these girls are like clean and jerking over 100 kilos above their heads. So that's two times their body weight over their head. And it's just like, it's just unfathomable. And I think we can all appreciate, because we all work with barbells, we all do lift things. So we kind of have a little bit of a relationship with that weight. And even just this morning, I was watching the replay of the 67 kilo guys, right? So these are guys that are much smaller than me, and they were clean and jerking, you know, 185 kilos above their head. And I could deadlift that very, you know, slowly. And these guys had enough power in them to get that over their head. It was just amazing. I always love it.
I know. It's so inspiring. I think that's probably the pinnacle of any kind of barbell stuff is Olympic weightlifting. I think that's you know, where we've all got to look up to and be inspired by that.
Yeah. I'm actually really excited to watch the men's 109 plus category. So they're like the big super heavyweight dudes. And there's one fellow from Georgia. His name is Lasha Tallahassee. I think I pronounced his name correct. Yeah. And he won gold in Rio. Okay, and he's like world champ. He's the man, and he might be the first person to have over a 500 kilo total. So that's lifting 500 kilos above your head in two lifts.
That's insane. Oh
yeah, he might be the first guy to do that. So that's on the 4th of August. So I know where I'm going to be on that. I think it's a Friday, maybe a Saturday. So I'm going to be glued there watching that one there. So I'm excited for that.
I'm excited about that. That sounds really good. Like, yeah, that sort of stuff is so inspiring, because also we know how hard they've worked to get there. And it's pure. It's very pure, the Olympics, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
World of bodybuilding, we're not going to get into that now. But, it's definitely, there's a seediness to it, whereas the Olympics is just awesome.
Yeah. But look, this weekend is also an exciting weekend. We've got our deadlift competition, the first challenge liftoff, where we'll be inviting individuals to post a video of themselves completing a deadlift. Deadlift one rep max, and posting it to our Facebook support group or onto Instagram and tagging us at the Max and the Maxine Challenge. And yeah, hopefully we can pull some numbers that might be comparable to the Olympics, right?
Yeah, just like the Olympics. I might get an extra 100 kilos of weights delivered to my shed in the next couple of days to just, you know, unless we get out of here, we don't know. But look, the other thing is with this competition, I have seen, you know, a few people have actually sent me some deadlifts, which has been great to have a look at, and fantastic. If you're in lockdown and you don't have access to a lot of weight, it doesn't matter. Just play around and chuck it in, because with the competition, it's not based on who does the most. It's actually just a random draw. So you should go in to win a prize and just have a bit of fun. It doesn't matter. If you've got 10 kilos available to you, you know, make it work.
Yes, you're right. And look, we want it to be a celebration of lifting. So it's not based on any merits or who lifts the most. It's going to be whoever participates and celebrates with us. We will add their names to a hat and we'll pick out a winner. It's going to be a really cool prize.
Yeah. And just use what you can, you know, if you have a suitcase and that's all you've got, then you deadlift that.
Yep. Grab some books, maybe some big containers of water. You could buy them from Coles and you can lift them up. They'll be pretty tricky.
Anything. Because we love that. It's just a celebration of picking something up off the ground and putting it back down.
Aren't we cool, Nick? Just pick it up and put it back down. That's what we're doing.
Right. Yep.
But look, the next challenge is starting soon. So we're coming towards the end of August will be the start of the next challenge. And if you've been joining us in our Facebook support group, you've probably seen a few trailers of the new programs. So the new 6-week nutrition template and the new 6-week style of our training templates as well. Now, both of our templates, the training and nutrition templates, will feature what we're calling a deload program. So we often get that question of what do we do after the challenge, and now we're really giving you that guidance and structure of what to do after the challenge. So you've been training really hard for 6 weeks, then we've got a 2-week deload program. And then preferably you come and join us for the next challenge where you jump on board for another 6 weeks of hard training. So there will be some guidance on what to do after your 6 weeks of training with a 2 week deload program built into your training template.
Yeah, that's so exciting. I mean, we've really listened to everyone's feedback about not really wanting to sort of get out of the challenge life. You want to continue on. So that's what we do. And I think it's wonderful that we've built it in. So well done to you as well, because you've really been the spreadsheet wizard. So without you, we would not have all these wonderful things.
Well, look, there's a few other things that we've added in there as well. So on the nutrition side of things, there's what we're calling a recovery diet. So you've been dieting for 6 weeks, let that be trying to build muscle or trying to lose some body fat. And after that 6 weeks, there will be what's called a recovery diet or a reverse diet, where we will slowly bring you back to maintenance calories. So again, that will last for 2 weeks until you go on to maintenance for that third week after the challenge. So the idea is that we're doing the challenge for 6 weeks. And then for 2 weeks after the challenge, we're doing our deload program along with our recovery diet for that 2 weeks, and then coming and joining us again for the next 6 weeks of training in the challenge. And that's a perfect time if you want to kind of reset everything and realign your goals. And you might go, well, I want to do a weight loss period for 6 weeks. I deload, do my recovery diet, and then I jump onto some muscle building or maybe some strength training in our new SPD program, or maybe some fitness training in our new triathlon program. So it's that idea to reset over 2 weeks, do another 6 weeks of training, reset another 6 weeks, and that would be a foundation for a really long career in fitness.
Yeah, you know what? It really feels like now it's like a virtual gym. So it's sort of like, what area of the gym are you going to step into for the next 6 weeks? You know, you're going to go to that area or that area. And how good is that, that you have all the variety so you can really take control of your fitness and decide where you want to head?
Yeah, it's going to be cool.
I'm excited about that.
And then finally, what's built into our programs is a filter function. And this is to help individuals who are in those states where we're in and out of lockdown, or individuals that have lots of food preferences or some injuries that we need to work around. So on your training template, what you can do is filter through the different equipment that you have available to you and different exercise and movement patterns you have available to you. So for example, maybe there's a snap lockdown, you're training at home and you only have a set of dumbbells. What you can do is filter through all the bits of equipment that you have. What your program will do will only show, let's say, dumbbells. So you can filter through, show only dumbbells. And then your program will only show you dumbbell exercises. And you just can go through and select those different exercises. And additionally, let's say you've got a little bit of a sore shoulder for whatever reason, and maybe pressing overhead is a little bit painful. You can just unselect those overhead movements, and then that will take away overhead movements on your plan, which is really cool. And then on the nutrition side of things, a similar idea where you can add or remove different food groups. So let's say you're someone who chooses not to eat red meat, only red meat, you don't choose to eat red meat, you can take those food items out. Or maybe you choose not to have dairy, you can remove those items out. Or maybe you don't like seafood, you can remove those food groups out as well. So lots of ways that we can filter the plan to fit within our own preferences and our own, you know, resources that are available to us.
Yeah, I must say also, like, gym equipment's a little bit more readily available now. So, I mean, It is a good idea to just buy yourself a backup set of dumbbells for home at this point. Like, it's not going to hurt, because I just feel like it's just a good little resource to have. So maybe just keep an eye out for something like that and just have them sitting there. And, hey, it's great if you never have to use them, but it's sort of a good little investment to have.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think that's something as simple as a set of dumbbells, those adjustable dumbbells, and a resistance band. You could do so many different exercises along with different body weight exercises and bits and pieces. And like for me, I love places like Kmart. Kmart have fitness equipment. They have adjustable dumbbells. I think it was like $50 for like a 20 kilo set of dumbbells that are like those little screw ones. You could grab a resistance band for like $5 or $10. There you go. For like $60, the price of the challenge, you can have that bit of equipment. If gyms are open, happy days, you could pack it all away in a nice little case that it comes with, put it in the closet. Great. You can open it up next time something happens. And it's great for those times where maybe you don't have that maybe hour and a half or 2 hours to leave your house, drive to the gym, do your little workout, drive home, and then get it ready. You can just grab your dumbbells and maybe do a little bit of a workout out in your backyard. So they're nice little things to have, and it can be a really small investment.
Yeah, and you can always join in my Wednesday morning class as well. So don't forget that. That's available all the time. We never stop doing that, 7:30 a.m., just saying.
Nice little plug. I love it.
Thank you very much.
Look, Nick, let's go into some non-scale victories for the week. Take us through. Who did you find this week?
All right. So we love our non-scale victories, and I'm loving the fact that everyone's participating. So we've got Elena Deladario. Now, I hope that I've pronounced that right, but if I haven't, it might be Deladrio. I'm not sure, but it's one of those two. And she said, I had a great weight session yesterday, improving on the deadlift technique, pulling the lats down and bracing the core, feeling much better that I can lift more, and the exercise is feeling easier to do as I get no sore back now, loving the deadlift. So that's great. I love that because we all know that the deadlift, when you finally perform it correctly and you start to use your lats and, you know, you drive with the legs, you push the floor away, it suddenly you think to yourself, how did I even incorporate my lower back into this? So once you kind of click that on, then you don't get afraid of the weight. You realize that you can, I don't even say pull, I say push enough weight up, you know, push the floor away and then you pull it up. But so I love that one. Love it. Love anything about where somebody's refining their technique to make it stronger. So that's fantastic. Well done, Elena. That's my middle name too. So, you know, we've got something in common. We're Italian and, you know, we like deadlifting. So we should, you know, hang out.
I love it. That's well awesome.
Okay. And then we've got Brad Canning. So this is from the journal. So Brad said he has switched to running since lockdown. He ran 11K in an hour. Fitness has improved so much since the beginning of the challenge. Super happy with the weight I've dropped as well. Well done, Brad. You know, flipping and making the most out of lockdown and thinking, what can I actually do? You know, outside is free. You know, that's a good slogan. You know, outside, you're allowed to go outside, you're allowed to run. Even in Melbourne here where we have masks all the time, you're actually allowed to run without a mask. So, you know, get running because it's the one time when you don't have to wear one. And, fantastic, Brad. Well done.
Really. Congratulations, Brad. That's awesome.
Very proud of Brad. Have you got any?
I've got a couple. So I was going through the journals. I love reading the journals. And I found Tina Whitebread. And she says that she's feeling stronger and fitter. Just wishing for the abs. Lol, she says. Pleased with what I've achieved so far, though. So Tina, that's awesome. You know, you're feeling fitter. You're feeling stronger. Being a little bit more patient for those abs to come through. And she's pleased with what she's doing so far. And I think that's a great one where many of us are really doing the challenge because we want that scale to change, the numbers on the scale to change, and focusing on that performance outcome, such as getting fitter, getting stronger, is awesome to see. So congratulations to Tina.
Yeah, and the thing is, I really do believe once you start to flip it around and focus on that sort of thing, that's when the results actually do come flying in, because you when you do get stronger, you build more muscle and it all comes from there. So brilliant.
Awesome. I've got another one that I found on our Facebook support groups. This one goes out to Melissa Joanne, and she says that 10 weeks ago, she was a size 14, and today I fit in my brand new size 10 jeans. Woohoo, she says, with a little dancing emoji, which is awesome to see. So congratulations to Melissa and dropping a couple of pant sizes in her jeans.
That's pretty good, because also I must say, there's been a few people this week that have mentioned that size 10, and I know for a lot of women that's a really big goal to get to that size, even though like size isn't necessarily, you know, a thing, but I know that a lot of people feel so good once they get there. So well done, very good.
That's awesome. And then finally here I have Ian Lursa. So Ian Lursa, he posts a lot on our Facebook support group. He's got a nice manly beard, which is awesome to see. And he's got a really wicked home gym, which he posts a lot about, which is cool. And he posts a non-scale victory on his leg press. He has a leg press at home. How cool.
Oh, man, I'm jealous. Can we come and train there,
please? We're going to have to go to Ian's place. And he says that he does 440 kilos for 10 reps in the leg press, up from 400 kilos, which is just amazing. Right, you know, he's getting close to that like half a ton on a leg press for 10 reps, and he has 400 kilos of weights, which is awesome. Like, I don't have 400 kilos of weight. I want 400 kilos of weight. That's cool.
I know, me too. Go Ian, that's awesome. I love people like Ian that you know, just show us how to do it, you know, just get on with it. I love it. Love it. Love it. Love it.
It's awesome. And the thing I like about Ian is he's always posting videos of his technique, asking for feedback and some advice on how to improve. And what I love about being a coach is when someone asks for help, then I see them apply that and then, you know, ask for that next step of help, which is, I love seeing that where, you know, someone has reached out for help, they've listened, they've applied it, and then now they're looking for that next step. And Ian does that consistently where he would ask for help, I'll give him some advice, he goes and applies that and then looks for that next step even further. So that's awesome to see, Ian. So congratulations. We love seeing that.
Go Ian.
Go Ian. Woo. Look, Nick, let's move into our coach's corner. So take us away. What's your coach's corner tip for the week?
Today, my coach's corner tip is about fasted cardio. So the question is fasted cardio beneficial for fat loss? So the thing is, I'll just answer it and say no. Okay, so that's my answer straight away. It is not more beneficial. So there's really no point necessarily in sort of setting yourself up for the day thinking that you're doing it and getting something out of it. So put it this way, if it's a struggle for you, if you get up and you're starving and you're like, oh gosh, I've got to do my cardio first and get it done to lose fat. Firstly, I'll just say one other thing. The other thing is doing a whole bunch of cardio before you do your weight training is probably a little bit counterproductive as well. So let's just say that. But it will, put it this way, it will increase fat burning during the exercise more than cardio that is done fed. So you will burn more fat while you're doing it. But the thing is, in the reverse, for the rest of the day, you're not going to burn more fat. Whereas if you eat something, your body's actually then going to continue to burn fat after. So in the end, they actually cancel each other out. They actually end up pretty much the same. So for me, I personally think what it needs to come down to is how hard do you want to do your session? And you really need to be doing things pretty, so we're talking cardio because we're not just talking about our steps. We're talking about something here where you're trying to do something to possibly get better at it, you know, make your body better. So you actually need to work fairly hard. So you really need the fuel to do that. Otherwise, you're going to stay pretty static. So I'd be going, you know, a banana, a protein shake. We're not talking about having necessarily a steak meal before we do our cardio, unless you like that in the mornings. I don't know, you know, what people's preferences are. But the other thing is, though, don't stress if you do it and you're used to it and your body feels used to it. It's not going to really make much of a difference either way. But if you're deliberately trying to do it for a reason that you think that it's going to burn more fat and that it's superior, stop.
I like it.
Yeah. And look, I'll just give you a real personal thing. For many, 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 many years, I used to do maybe 2 spin classes before I did any weight training, and I would do that completely fasted with a black coffee. Now, I must say, even though I was quote unquote strong and could deadlift lots of things off the floor and all that, I didn't have the muscular development that I craved. Now, I reckon it's because I was underfeeding myself. So I will never do that again.
I like it. It's good advice. And I do think something like fasted cardio gets in this big umbrella of kind of like magical strategies that is going to lead to more weight loss, right? And it's just simply not true. Of course, there are a few mechanisms like you kind of suggested. Like, sure, if you do cardio or do physical activity while you're fasted, you're going to burn more fat. You're going to oxidize more fat. What happens is through our metabolism. But like you said, it gets reversed through the rest of the day and your body compensates when you do eat something by metabolizing more glucose instead. So it really does. Yeah. And it really does come down to that energy in versus energy out. And I think it really just comes down to our preference, where some individuals, when they do eat something before they do cardio training, oh geez, they get an upset stomach, they don't like it, maybe they don't have time in the morning because they've got to run out the door to go to the cardio. Okay, whatever. That's the way that you like doing it, that's your preference, great, happy days, keep doing it that way, no stress. But if you are in that camp of, oh gosh, I need to do fasted cardio because it's the only way to lose weight, think again, that's not completely true.
That's right. And the other thing that we have to watch out for as well is, like, say a big RPM spin class, that actually makes you so ravenous that if you haven't really kind of planned for that, you can go and eat the entire house after you've done it, you know, because you will be starving and your body wants to quickly get that energy back. And you can actually, you probably eat double the calories that you've burnt in that particular class just in 2 minutes after. So just be really careful of that. I see it a lot. Well, I used to see it a lot when I used to teach in spin, people that were super, like, I guess, fit and strong and everything, but they didn't have the body composition that I'm assuming that they probably craved. And that's because the spin made them so starving, and they'd do their fasted spin and then they'd go and just eat and maybe have 10 coffees with big milk and sugar and things just to try and, you know, help their body recover. So just a little banana or a protein shake or something, you know, make sure that you have, like, I like to have, at the moment I'm still loving my Kriya Burn, I like to make sure that I've got all that stuff, and it's really making a huge difference to me in the mornings. Possibly also not doing spin anymore is making a bit of a difference. Yeah, anyway, so no, it's not.
No, it's not. I like it. Good one. Now, for me, my coach's corner tip of the week is, I guess, because I've been watching lots of Olympic weightlifting this week, I've been really interested in how individuals are grabbing the barbell when they're going to perform their lifts. So I'd like to talk a little bit about different grips that we use when we're using barbells or any sort of apparatus where we need to pull or push or whatever we're doing with a barbell. Okay. And I think it's a great time for us to start paying attention to what our hands are doing when we are exercising. And I've spoken a little bit in the past about foot pressure and, you know, the involvement of our foot. And if we think about the ends of our periphery, meaning our arms and legs, there's lots of nerve endings. And all these nerve endings give signals to our brain about the environment. Okay. So it begins with what our external senses are telling our brain. And what we find is, let's say in the foot, our ability to feel the ground gives our brain feedback on how much force it needs to produce up the chain. So if we are like masking our feet with like really padded shoes, we can see some changes in the way that the hip functions, or even like the kind of quote, quote, core, whatever that means, kind of functions when we're lifting. So this is why we kind of advise that we want to feel the ground when we're lifting. And similarly is in our grip. And we find that by giving our hands more stimulus onto whatever we're lifting, we can get more activation and recruitment of muscles around, let's say, our shoulders and our upper back, and then leading through the rest of that chain through the core and everything. Okay.
I love this. This is so interesting because, like, just naturally, I am drawn to like absolute raw deadlifting. I don't like to even have straps. I don't like to have shoes. And I just love the fact that this is connected. You know, I love the fact that you're even speaking about, like, without the shoes, you know, you just naturally then know how much force to produce. Because I hadn't thought of it like that. It's just, I don't like wearing shoes when I'm deadlifting. I don't like it. And that's why.
Yeah. And often when we add like lots of layers of like equipment, we kind of like blinding our kind of senses. So we need to have more conscious like feedback. So like what you said, when we're using tools like wrist straps, what we tend to do is need to actively kind of cue our shoulders, where if we're just kind of using our hands, our body just kind of knows to do that because our brain's getting all that stimulus. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, when we look at our grip, and this is going to be a little bit of an active task for everyone who's listening. So if you were to look at your hand and kind of make like a fist. So firstly, when we think about our grip, most of our grip comes from the fourth and the fifth digits. Okay. Now our fourth and fifth digits are like that ring finger and that pinky finger. So digit one would be our thumb. Digit two would be that pointing finger. Digit three would be the thumb finger. And then digit four and five would be our ring finger and pinky finger. So if you were to make like a fist, most of our grip comes from our fingers four and five. So the fingers one, two, and three, like you can hold something and lift up your fingers like one, two, and three and still be able to grip something because they're just kind of like playing a little bit of a role. Okay.
I'm doing it right.
Yeah, no. Hopefully everyone's kind of doing that.
Like, I love that.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So first thing we need to appreciate is, how are you kind of gripping hold? Are you one to kind of try to grip hold through the first three fingers, which you're going to make yourself weak, versus that those digits four and five? Okay. Next, we can actually look at the joints of our hands. So if you look at like your palm and then actually look at the fingers, and maybe we've got a little bit of calluses. And I think for me, I've got lots of calluses around digits four and five, because that's kind of where the bar kind of sits for me. Right. We've got that first joint, which is kind of where, you know, like when we make a fist, that's what we would connect with, like punching something. You know, we kind of call that like the metatarsal phalangeal joints. Okay. That's what people kind of crack when they go to, you know, crack their hands. Okay. Then if we look further up our fingers, we've kind of got two more joints. We've got the, they're called pips and dips. So pips, P-I-P, meaning the proximal, so closer to the body. And then the dips, meaning the distal, and it stands for distal interphalangeal joint, okay? So pips and dips, right? Now, what happens when we go to lift? We want the load to be kind of in our palm of our hand, kind of pressing onto the metatarsal phalangeal joint, so like that punching, like kind of knuckles area, okay? So that's kind of where we want the bar to sit. But for some of us, when we go to lift, you know, as we get tired, the bar would kind of roll into the area called the pips, okay? So we're kind of like holding in our fingers rather than in our palm. Now, most of that input comes from our palm and we want like a nice strong connection with our palm. And if you do spend some time watching like the Olympic weightlifters and it gives a close-up of them grabbing hold of the bar, geez, you can see their hand completely engulf that bar. Like they're not just holding on with their fingertips or holding on with their pips, they're holding on to their entire hand. So that's the first thing we want to appreciate. When you're grabbing hold of the bar, we want a nice strong grip on that bar and being careful that it doesn't roll into our pips, okay? Now, when it does roll into our pips, that's when we can see individuals complaining of things like forearm pain, elbow pain, because it starts to pull on a lot of these forearm flexors rather than like these bigger muscle groups. It's just smaller muscle groups to hold on with our fingers rather than with our palm, okay? So if you're experiencing lots of like that inside elbow pain, right? Or that, you know, that classic like golfer's elbow as opposed to tennis elbow, that can be a cause because you're just gripping it incorrectly. Okay. And most of that comes down to just awareness because we might start off in a good position, but as you fatigue, oh gosh, I've done it. It rolls into my fingers, you know, and we just keep going. Okay. Now let's talk about different hand placements. Now, of course, we've got our overhand and our underhand grip, which is just the common grips that we use when we're grabbing hold of a barbell, a lat pull down, chin up bar, right? That overhand, underhand grip. Sometimes we have that neutral grip, depending on what attachment we have. Okay. And these are like totally fine to use. That overhand grip is a common one that we would use when we're starting off with a deadlift. I might use that for my kind of lighter weights, but then I find that as I get heavier, it's difficult with my grip because my hands slowly want to start opening. So it's quite difficult with that double overhand grip to maintain it as we get heavier in the load where our grip is the limiting factor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Mm. Now, my advice with that grip position is we kind of want to have knuckles down. Okay. So if you are using a double overhand grip, especially with like a deadlift, think about when you're grabbing hold, knuckles down to the floor, and that will be quite helpful. Okay. Now in saying that, you know, it is important to think about where you're actually grabbing hold of the bar. And I think a common novice or beginner thing to do is just to grab hold and grip and rip, as they say, grip then rip. And what tends to happen is the hand placement on the bar is simply not even. And you might grab one side, you might grab, you know, maybe on that natural kind of spot, right? And then the other side is another 5 centimeters further away comparatively. And what that means is the bar is going to lift up on an angle, you know, balance. So take a moment, think about where you're grabbing hold of that barbell. And of course the width of that as well. Because if you think of, you know, just lines, when most of us would go to deadlift, our hands are kind of in line with our shoulders. So our arms are almost like ropes. They're not really lifting. They're just kind of there. And what happens is our wrist ends up being in a nice straight line. Everything is, you know, linear. When we're grabbing out really wide, what happens is our wrist would be on one angle and then our arm will be on a different angle, which just creates a weakness, a fault. So just think about where we're placing our hands. Watch a video of yourself and go, okay, is there nice straight lines? Are you kind of, do you look more like, you know, a nice skyscraper that you'd see in a city or something really abstract and
maybe Tower of Pisa?
Yeah. And you might be like, oh, that's going to fall over soon, you know, in terms of architecture. So think about that. You know, are you a strong, stable building, or are you those buildings that you're like, oh, that might, you know, okay, just consider those aspects. Then of course we move on to some other grips, and that's when we kind of go into this idea of a mixed grip or a power grip on a deadlift. And I guess when we go into these shapes, one thing that can happen is we get more power. We are able to grip hold better. And most individuals, as we go heavier, would use that mixed grip, that power grip. And what happens is because we're kind of pushing in opposite directions, it kind of makes a little clamp and we get nice and strong with that grip. problems that we face with the power grip is the element of rotation. So because our hands are under and over, our whole body is actually twisted. There's a bit of torque in the body. And what can happen is we rotate when we lift with that power grip. Now, just like in surfing, snowboarding, skateboarding, we all have our kind of go-to grip where we feel comfortable, right? Our regular stance, or like, you know, that goofy stance, that idea. So some of us might be, you know, that left hand underneath, right hand over, or some of us might be the other way, where the left hand is over, right hand underneath. Now, over-reliance on one grip can cause some problems much later down the track. So if you've been lifting for 10 years, doing the same overhand, underhand grip, and, you know, now you're up in the big leagues of 300, 400 kilos, okay, we can face problems. And that's when things like, you know, a bicep tear can occur when we have been only doing one style of lifting for a really long period of time. We can face problems. For many individuals that are listening to this, me included, you included, Nick, keeping that same power grip for our lifting career can be completely fine. It would be wise to spend some time just flipping it over. You might feel very different. It might be a little bit alien and abstract, but it might be a way for you to kind of reconnect with your body by kind of changing it up. You're a little bit more aware, being like, oh, geez, what's happening with my shoulders now that I've kind of switched my grip over? So my advice is maybe through like a deload week is to actually switch it up, right? So you've spent 6 weeks on training a deadlift, maybe that power grip, you've been lifting, you know, twice your body weight. Hey, happy days. In that deload time, it might be wise to switch your grip over, reconnect with the movement, make it a little bit uncomfortable so you can feel it again. You're kind of training your body in a little bit of a different way, and then you could jump back onto what feels normal to you. Okay.
Sounds good.
Now, other grips that we can see is in Olympic weightlifting is what's called a hook grip. Now, hook grip is funky, and think of if you've ever done like boxing or any sort of striking class, and what you might do is tuck your thumb into your fist and then the instructor will be like, don't do that, right? What a hook grip is that position where we're tucking our thumb into our fist, okay? So going on to that idea of that fourth and fifth finger contributing to our grip, what you'll be doing is grabbing hold of the bar with those two fingers, resting your thumb on the bar, and then with your digits 2 and 3, you kind of grab over your thumb and you create a hook. And what happens there is you're basically creating like a wrist wrap, you know, those tools that some individuals will use to hook onto the bar. Now, if you do try this, you might get a really sore thumb. So
you squash it.
Yeah. So what Olympians will do is actually put a lot of tape on their thumb. So if you do watch some Olympic weightlifting, there'll be lots of tape over the thumb to just kind of stop that a little bit. And then what people will do is it kind of develop a callus on their thumb. That's because they've been practicing that. I've done a little bit of hook grip work with my Olympic training work, and I think you have as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people love it, and some, you know, powerlifters will utilize a hook grip because they're able to, you know, get a better grip on things. And as you learn how to use it, you don't destroy your thumbs. You kind of know where to place your thumb so that the whole load isn't going through your thumb, right? So that's another one to use as well. And of course, we have all those other accessories, such as like the tails. I use tails a little bit. There's the figure eights. And there's some even like actual metal hooks that some people get.
Pirate.
Yeah. And look, they're tools to use. I use them sometimes, but it's something that we don't want to rely on long term, because it can blunt some of that stimulus that we're getting into our body. Another grip that I just want to touch on before we move on is that idea of a false grip, or some people call it a suicide grip, which can be helpful in pulling activities. So if you're going to row, you might find it helpful if you actually place your thumb on the same side as your fingers, and it's called a false grip. And you may find that it kind of takes away a little bit of that kind of bicep recruitment, and you can feel it a little bit more into like your lats and the back of your shoulders. Just a little bit of an anecdote there. But if you are choosing to use a false grip or a suicide grip on a bench press, I think that's very foolish. And you should always have your thumb on the other side of the bar when you're doing a bench press, because you don't want that barbell to roll off your hand and fall onto your neck. That's not a fun way to.
I like that. Good tip. Yeah, maybe just practice it with like a rowing movement or something where you're fairly safe
Yeah, yeah. And it's just something to explore. So basically the main takeaway is to spend some time becoming a little bit more conscious of your grip and experience how it feels when you're paying a little bit more attention to where you're putting your hands and what you're feeling. And if you notice any changes in your body from the input on your hands.
Perfect. I love it. Yeah. It's also, it just ties into how you approach that barbell. So it's all about approaching the barbell with respect in terms of where you're gripping it and then moving forward into what you've said. So I love it. I hope everybody's going to spend some time really having a look at what they're doing.
Yeah. And, you know, just quickly touching on weightlifting gloves. I think most individuals don't need weightlifting gloves. Let's say myself, working in the clinic, I put my hands on a lot of people and my hands are always really soft. So if your reason for wearing weightlifting gloves is that maybe you work in a field where you need to show your hands and calluses are no good or something like that, I think that wearing weightlifting gloves can actually contribute more to calluses because there's more rubbing that occurs onto your hands. Okay. And then part of weightlifting is to develop some strength in your hands and get that feedback from your hands. So for most of us, we probably benefit from ditching the weightlifting gloves. They're not as popular now. I think back in like the Ronnie Coleman bodybuilding days, like because he wore gloves, everybody wore gloves. But for most individuals, we don't need to wear any gloves at all.
Yeah, and that's the same. I mean, this is different. Oh, that doesn't really make sense. But this the bar pad as well. See, I don't use that at all.
Yeah, no.
I feel like it adds an element of instability for me or something. But I like to connect. I like to connect things with my skin. I don't mind a little bit of tearing or blood. That's me. This is life, you know, in the gym. Yeah. Love it. So, yeah, I don't think you need weightlifting gloves either. No, not interested.
I think that bar pad is only helpful if you're doing something like a hip thrust.
True. Yeah.
Yeah. So that bar isn't sitting on bone.
Definitely hip thrust. Oh, I use that for hip thrust. I'm no hero with those.
No.
But yeah, I can't squat with a bar pad, but perhaps that's another topic for down the track.
Yeah. No, ditch the bar pad for squats. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, look, let's go into some questions for the week. And Nick, we have questions about cellulite popping up on our Facebook support group. Do you want to take us away and answer this question?
Sure. Now, the thing with cellulite is, look, firstly, if you are going through a weight loss phase, you're actually probably starting to feel fairly proud of where your body's heading, and you're probably looking a little bit more, and you actually tend to sort of start to be a little bit more critical because we always want more and more and more of ourselves. And also because there's so many, obviously, images readily available on social media that have actually, I mean, we can all do our own filters and things like that. So who's actually showing this sort of stuff? So automatically you sort of tend to think that if you're losing weight or body fat that you shouldn't have cellulite. But people of all sizes and shapes have cellulite. So let me just put it that way. If it's a goal of yours to get rid of it all, as I said in an answer to one of the questions on cellulite, even at the bodybuilding shows, cellulite is everywhere. You know, it's not even an evil thing, it just is a thing. And that's probably why everybody has such a dark tan, because those sorts of things can cover up cellulite. And for some reason it's been turned into an evil thing, but it isn't necessarily an evil thing. So that was just my preface. And also let me just say, there are some ways to lessen the appearance of it. So just say you have it everywhere and you're like, it stops you from wearing shorts or things like that. So there are certain things that you can do. Now, being dehydrated actually exacerbates the appearance of it. So make sure that you're hydrated. Hydration also helps to make sure that your body is working correctly, that things are moving through your body nicely, because you don't want things to sort of stick around in your body. Lots of, say heated plastics that have BPA in them, they're things that probably some excess toxins that you could get rid of. So also the other thing is, it's funny because water retention is different to being hydrated. And that's an interesting point that I need to bring up, because people go, wait a minute, I don't want to retain water by drinking water, but you actually need to drink a whole bunch of water to not retain water. Does that make sense? Because I think people get really stuck thinking, oh my gosh, if I drink too much water, I'll get bloated. But that's actually what you need to do to lessen the appearance of the water retention that is making the cellulite worse as well, if that makes any sense. Because when you're dehydrated, your body tries to hang on to stuff in your cells as much as it can because it doesn't know what the hell is going on. So that's just a little cellulite hack, I would say. But also, like, when somebody's losing body fat, you can't choose where it comes from. And it might come off in bits and pieces, and it might come off a little bit from there and a little bit from there, and then some bits might not be even. And so that's another thing. You can see that I'm very passionate about this. I like anything about women's health. So your menstrual cycle and where you are is going to have a bit of an impact on the visibility of your cellulite as well. So we don't necessarily think of this as a thing. We just get mad at ourselves and go, why? But as your body enters the luteal phase of your menstrual cycle, it can lead to changes because this phase ends once you start your period, and excess water retention is what this phase is all about, unfortunately, because it's just getting your body ready to start your period. So that's the time when you need to drink the water because even when I Googled this just to see if lots of people are asking questions about it, it's like it fills itself in. You know, I Google where it fills itself in and it goes, is cellulite more visible before my period? So people have asked that all the time, and it's because of this change in hormone. And it's increased levels of the hormone aldosterone, which really rises during that phase. So it can't be helped. It's a natural process, and it's responsible for that stupid bloating that we might feel as well. And then you get stressed about it. So then your cortisol levels go up, and that doesn't help either. So these are all these little hormones that can be a little bit naughty around this time. So the best idea to make sure that you're on track with this is to stay on track with your diet, stay on track with your hydration, and make sure that you don't eat too many processed or fatty foods, especially around the time of your period. And just keep going. Eventually, as you get leaner, it does tend to come away from certain areas. And there are other areas where it might live forever, and just really just go, how do you get a bikini body? Put a bikini on your body. The end.
I like it. Look, I do think cellulite is just completely normal. I remember looking at a statistic of something like 70 or 80% of people have cellulite, and essentially cellulite is just our fat cells. And the best way to remove cellulite is to continue to lose body fat. And that is basically built around that energy in versus energy out. We want to focus on strength training. We want to focus on improving our physical activity level, and we want to try to eat in an energy deficit where we are managing our energy intake. And I don't believe, and I'm not confident to say, that there are any quote hacks for cellulite. Cellulite is completely normal. And I do think there are influencing factors, like you said, such as our hydration, our hormones. But at the end of the day, if you are holding body fat, you are going to have cellulite. And the best way to reduce our cellulite is to continue losing body fat. And it's part of life. And I think I've got body fat right now somewhere on my butt, my thighs, and that's okay. I'm okay with that. And I'm sure you have cellulite. I'm sure my neighbor has cellulite, and it's okay. And, you know, there's lots of ways that we can hide it. I mean, just turn a little bit. We're all really good at hiding our flaws, but you're right. You know, if you want to put on a bikini, put on a bikini and own it, because it's completely normal.
That's right. And also I find that the more weights I do, say, in my butt area, the bigger my butt gets, because it has more like muscle, and therefore it pushes on everything and makes it rounder and firmer. So just keep lifting those weights. Honestly, I've completely changed the shape of my legs and everything in the last 10 or so years. So I'm sure I could whip back to my 20s and find some pretty full-on photos. So just try and enjoy the process of just the weight loss, and don't stress too much about the cellulite. But there's a couple of answers for you.
Yeah. The next question here is about training multiple times per day. And this question was found on our training thread on the forum. And the challenger asked that they explain that they've got really busy days at the moment. And they thought, would it be better if I train a little bit in the morning, a little bit in the evening, or break it up? I think they said if it was into multiple sessions throughout the day. And let's just touch on it quickly. And first thing I could say is that for some individuals who are in kind of more that late intermediate to advanced level, training multiple times per day might actually be better for muscle protein synthesis or for hypertrophy. Okay. So we know that after a resistance training bout, we get a big spike in muscle protein synthesis, which is that really complex chain of events that basically builds muscle. Okay. If we were having more doses of heavy resistance training, we can have more peaks. Okay. So the idea is if we train, you know, 12 hours apart, we get two nice peaks of muscle protein synthesis compared to one big training session where we kind of get a peak, but the difference between those two peaks might be an extra like 20%. So we can either get like, you know, one big peak, let's say that's at 100 units, or we can get two other peaks at maybe, you know, 75 units. Okay. So the overall muscle protein synthesis for the day could be higher if you have multiple sessions throughout the day. Okay. That's the first thing that we just need to appreciate, that it can happen like that. And most individuals who are on this like elite pro level, look at something like CrossFit, look at something like bodybuilders, look at like sports athletes, football teams, any sort of sports teams, they have multiple sessions a day where they're doing, you know, some cardio training. At one point, they're doing some strength training, and heck, they might even do some technical training. They do have multiple sessions per day. For those individuals who are having multiple sessions a day, we need to start training like an athlete, training smart. And then we also need to start behaving like an athlete where they spend most of their time recovering. They're not, you know, working a full-time job and running after their kids and trying to go to the bank and the post office and all the bits and pieces in between. They're living at like sports camps, and all they do is train, eat, get a massage, train, eat, sleep. Like that's their lifestyle. So that's the first thing that we need to appreciate, is that if you want to train like that, we do need to start moving into that realm of, hey, you're a pro athlete now, you've got to start acting like it. Okay. For most individuals, if we were to take the volume of the challenge, volume meaning the total amount of exercise, maybe split that in half and do half in the morning, half in the evening, okay, most of us will be totally fine. We're doing maybe 10 sets of exercise in the morning, maybe 10 sets in the evening, or even less than that, maybe, you know, three exercises at three sets in the morning and three exercises at three sets in the evening. Okay, that's totally fine to do that. We would be okay in that environment. Some of us want to train multiple times per day because it might be more time efficient. And the rebuttal to that is that if you are going to go train, you would need to do some logistical work to train, right? As in traveling to the gym, or maybe walking into your garage and setting up your gym equipment, or maybe changing into athletic clothes, or doing some sort of warm up, or you know, doing some sort of cool down. So there are some logistical time that we need to add on to our workout. So yeah, sure, you might be able to benefit from squeezing in half an hour of a workout and then maybe another half an hour. But if you include all that extra time on either end, it might be longer time of your day to train twice a day than it is just to train once, get it all over and done with, great, happy days, walk away. Okay, so that's another thing that we need to appreciate. Now, you know, on the pro side, going back to that pro side, if we're training multiple times a day, you can hit a few exercises hard, rest and recover throughout the day. You might get a few meals in, and then in the evening, hit another couple of exercises hard and fast in those last little bit. Compare that through one training session where that first exercise, we're going to be able to complete it at maybe 100% effort. And that second exercise, maybe 90% effort, third exercise, 80% exercise, you know, 80% effort, and then so on. So maybe that last set of your one exercise a day, you're training at maybe 50% of your effort because you're tired. You've just done 5-6 different exercises. You've been training for an hour. You're tired. Okay. So there are, you know, maybe that benefit of, you know, splitting it up like that. And then back to maybe like another con of it is that by training at maximal effort, you know, in one session where we are slowly decreasing our total output to maybe that 50% mark, we are actually applying a really good stimulus on our muscle. So we get this really high threshold of motor recruitment units. And what that means is that we start to recruit some of these large muscle fibers. Okay. So if you're following along with me with physiology, if you're doing a little bit more volume at one point, you fatigue some of these like smaller muscles and you fatigue some of the bigger muscles. And then you basically need to recruit some of these really large muscles. So there are some benefits of training all at once. So the main takeaway of all of this is that it can be done training multiple times per day. You might see some benefits and there might be some limitations to that. If you think it's going to make it quicker to train like that, think about the logistics. But if you do have like those small windows of time, maybe you've got half an hour to go to the garage, do a couple of sets, and then, you know, go back to work in another half an hour. Okay, that can be helpful for some individuals.
Mm. Oh, I like that. That's really good. Really interesting. The only thing I would also add is if you've committed to doing that, then you have to also make sure you follow through, because just say you thought, oh, well, I'm going to do half of it at nighttime, but then you're like, oh, no. But then you go back to doing the original thing again and you never quite get around to the second bit. So you have to have pure dedication to do that as well. So like, think like an athlete, as you said.
You do. Yeah. Look, the next question comes in and it was a question about technique and actually doing the exercise. And this question was posted on our Facebook support group. And the challenger was having some challenges with some of our circuits and some of the more fun exercises that are involved in there. And their question was basically the exercises that are in the circuit right now was a little bit too complicated for them at this time. And would it be more beneficial for that person to continue trying to learn this new exercise, or move to an exercise that they know that they're comfortable with and training through that older exercise? Okay. So Nick, do you want to take this away? What kind of advice would you give that person?
Well, I just want to point out, for me, it's sort of like, what are you in the gym to do? Because really you're in the gym to make your weaknesses no longer your weaknesses, and then new weaknesses will come, but you're not trying to necessarily make your strong bits stronger. You're trying to work on your weaknesses so then you can get stronger overall. So I wouldn't say necessarily ego, but you want to take all of that out of it. You're paying to go to the gym to fight resistance. So whether it's resistance, like physical, you know, barbell resistance weights, or whether it's mental resistance, you need to push through that to get to the next level. So if something scares you, I mean, obviously, within reason, you really need to try and do it. Because, for example, like I was thinking of this, and the best example I can think of is, you know, people that if you have no injuries and things like that, either an overhead squat or a pistol squat are two things that people often really avoid, because they're things that really test every part of your being. And, you know, people that can squat millions of kilos can often not do, a pistol squat. And you would either completely abandon it, never do it, or you can regress the movement. So you can take it back. You can do it where you're holding on to something. So you would have to have a look at what the exercise is. But what I would do is I would regress the movement, drop any weights, try and do it with body weight, and make sure that you are actually working whatever muscles it is, or if it's your cardiovascular system, if it's a taxing exercise and it puffs you out, then you need to get better. So my idea would be, without injury, to really regress that movement to the point where you can do it and build up to where you would ultimately like to be. Not avoid it altogether, because there's a reason why you are wanting to avoid it. So often, if I'm even when I'm doing a class, even when I was doing spin or whatever I was doing, I would always say to people, you know, in one of the tracks, I'd say, you have to pick your least favorite thing to do here and do it for 5 minutes, because that is what makes you ultimately better, fighting the resistance.
I like that. And a good maybe analogy is to think about yoga. And I think most of us have gone and completed a yoga class of some sort. And there are some really funky postures that you can get into in yoga.
Yeah.
Many of those from, like, you know, the frog and the crow and all the other animals that they have and stuff, right? And
brain, no feet on the ground.
Right.
Yeah.
And for many of them, like, I could not do them now because I've not practiced them. And if you go to a yoga class and you are always choosing to do the poses that you like or are competent at doing, you may not be improving because you're not trying to do the things that you're not competent at. And you're right. Like, you might not be able to go straight into the crane, no hands, no feet, whatever, hovering off the ground. I don't know what it is. But if you regress the movements that you could do it, maybe you're doing it slower with less range of motion and a little bit more controlled. You take your time. Okay. Then you're learning. You keep practicing it. And then you might be able to go a little bit further, a little bit deeper, a little bit faster until that point where you go, yeah, I'm now competent with that. And that's exactly the same with almost any exercise where you and I, Nick, you know, we have taken time to learn different exercises, such as the deadlift, the squat, the overhead squat, the pistol, the lunge, the bicep curl, all the exercises. And now we're at a point where we've got enough like physical competency where if I gave you a new creative exercise that I just came up with, you might do a couple of reps and be like, oh yeah, this feels a little bit, okay, I get it now. And that's because we're maybe a little bit further down our fitness journey. But maybe for newer individuals who are new to physical activity in general, sure, doing something like a lunge is going to be really challenging. You're going to lose your balance. You might not be able to use any load. You might need to do it really slow while holding onto a pole and a stick and a bench all at the same time so that you can lunge. But by practicing that is the only way that you can continue to progress that.
Yeah, because you probably need to practice what you feel like you can't do more than what you can.
Yeah. Now, look, the last question here, another question that popped up on our Facebook support group was about their final photos and do men need to shave all their hair for the final photos? Do men need to shave their hair? Now, I guess what the only comment I would make on that is just about general grooming. Some of us who might be more inclined to have more chest hair, we might not be able to see all of the work that we've put in. And something like trimming your chest hair or shaving your body hair may expose some more, striations, or maybe show our abs or show our chest a little bit more than if we don't. So I guess my advice would be to try to limit those external factors that might hinder our work that we've put in. And I guess there's a reason why bodybuilders look a certain way where they are shaved and tanned, okay, and have that little bit of grooming so that they can, show off what they've worked hard for. So yes, I would say for most of us, you'd benefit from a little bit of grooming. I'd also say that you'd probably benefit from thinking about how you are doing your final photos. You know, what clothes are you wearing? What, you know, are you wearing underwear or shorts, or what kind of hairstyle do you have, or are you putting any makeup on, or are you wearing jewelry, are you taking it off? You know, thinking about those things, like, that can contribute to the overall final transformation. And for many of us, you know, we're really proud of the final work that we put into it. Maybe it's something that you get a photo of and frame it, being like, oh wow, that time that I got a six pack, wow, I want to frame that and keep that as a keepsake or something. So I do think that taking that time to think about the effort that we put in can go a long way. Yeah,
because you never know where it's going to lead. So you sort of, now that you've committed to the fitness lifestyle, remember that you're setting an example for other people as well. So just think of everything as a representation of your brand.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, Nick, let's wrap it up there for episode number 28 of the Challenge Weekly Show. If you liked this episode, let us know. You can share this episode with a friend. You can leave us a review on iTunes, or you can share it with us on Instagram, which is always really cool to see.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Yeah, we'll catch you next week for episode number 29.
Bye.